After my divorce, I moved into a new neighborhood with my 6-year-old daughter, Dorothy. My husband and I tried our best, but sometimes things don't work out as you expect them to. He was having an affair and eventually came out about it. He said he wants to start fresh with this woman. I, on the other hand, was aware of all this, but procrastinated confrontation thinking about Dorothy. But when, as a father, he didn't care about his daughter, I realized this man doesn't deserve us anymore. So I let him go and stepped into a fresh start myself as well. I rented an apartment in a moderately looking building. I didn't want to spend much at that point because I was awaiting a promotion. I planned to shift to a New York office and stay with my mom for a while. I wanted Dorothy to be around her loving grandmother so that she can cope with her dad not being there. The apartment was quite big for the two of us and did come at a much lower cost than I assumed. But I thought maybe because of its condition, the landlady gave it at a cheap rate. A long, narrow corridor leads inside the apartment from the entrance. Two bedrooms and a kitchen area resided at the end of it. Dorothy's room and my room stood face to face. That was the main reason I chose this apartment. I could see clearly into her room from my bed, which I needed at this point to have an eye on her at night, because my daughter suffers from somnambulism. That, in layman's language, stands for sleepwalking. I don't know why she does that, but her doctor says it's just a phase, and with some precautions, she'll eventually improve. Earlier, her sleepwalking episodes occurred once a week, but after the divorce, it's become recurrent. Like last night, I dozed off on the couch in the living room. I woke up from my slumber hearing a clicking sound on the door. I got up and discovered Dorothy wasn't in her room, and the main door was wide open. I rushed outside and saw her sleepwalking in the empty corridor in the middle of the night. Thank God I stopped her before she stumbled down the stairs. After carrying her back to her bed, I couldn't sleep the entire night. It was terrifying to realize that even in her sleepwalking mode, she managed to unlock the door. Her psychiatrist, Mr. Muller, also said it was unnatural. He told me that I must keep an eye on her, but not just her sleepwalking. There are other eerie incidents as well that bother me these days. Since we moved to this apartment, I could feel how scary silence could be. There are very few people living here. I thought we were the only ones living on our floor, but one day when I was coming back from grocery shopping, something weird happened. Dorothy was in school. As I came near the door, I kept all my bags on the floor and started to look for my keys in my bag. I was just about to unlock the door when I felt the door of the opposite apartment open slightly. I could hear the creaking noise of the door. After unlocking my door, when I turned around to say hello to my neighbor, I found the door closed like before. It felt really weird because whoever was inside the apartment just opened the door, watched me, and closed it before I could turn around. The air sometimes feels heavy and too cold. I don't know why, but I don't get a good vibe around me here. I was working in the kitchen when I saw Dorothy's school bus dropping her off. The kitchen window faces the streets. I opened the window and yelled, "Come up, dear." Dorothy smiled and ran inside the apartment. We live on the first floor, so it takes only a minute or two for her to run inside. But when 5 minutes went by and still she didn't get in, I got worried. I came outside and saw she was standing near the door of the opposite apartment. She was smiling like she does whenever she greets people. I asked, "Dorothy, what are you doing there?" She turned at me and said, "Nothing, Mom. I'm hungry." She then ran inside without saying anything more. For the first time, I felt like she lied to me. I fixed her lunch, and while she ate, I asked again, "Was there someone talking to you?" "Where, Mom?" "Our opposite apartment, you know." "No, Mom." "Then who were you smiling at?" "No one." I could see her avoiding this conversation. Kids can act weird sometimes, so I too let it go. We watched cartoons together, and Dorothy never mentioned a single word about the neighbor's apartment. After dinner, I kissed her goodnight and double-locked the main door so that she couldn't open it this time. The next morning when she went to school, I decided to go to a shop and get a new handset. My phone was giving me some trouble the past few days, and it was time to buy a new one. Dorothy loves playing games on my phone, so I couldn't wait for her to come home and get all busy with it. I made some delicious chicken and pasta for dinner and sat near the computer to finish my last file of the day. I've been working remotely for a year now, and considering my situation, this is proving to be the best option for me right now. Time went by, and I heard Dorothy's school bus honking horns. Before I could get up, she came inside and said, "Mom, you bought a new phone?" "How do you know that?" She looked here and there and said in a hesitant voice,
Marlin told me."
I was shocked to hear this name for the first time. "Who is Marlin?"
The woman who lives in our opposite apartment."
"Oh. When did you meet her, and how did she know I got a new phone?"
"She knows. Please, let me see."
I gave her the phone and she got busy with it, as I expected. Out of shock and confusion, I went to the next door apartment and rang the doorbell. I wanted to talk to this Marlin because it felt creepy that she was keeping an eye on us like a stalker. I rang twice, thrice, but no one opened the door. "Maybe she's out," I thought. "I'll confront her in the morning." Dorothy played games the entire day, and when it was time for dinner, I found her asleep on the bed. I couldn't wake her up as she slept so peacefully. She was grasping my phone tightly. I let her sleep like that and came back to my bed. Around 2:30 a.m., I woke up all of a sudden. As my eyes went to Dorothy's room, I saw she wasn't in her bed. I ran outside and found the main door opened once again. Dorothy was sleeping on the floor near the door opposite of our apartment. Not just that, she had my phone with her. I took the phone away and carried her to my room. I then tucked her into bed once again. I was worried like hell. Why did she end up there? What is the deal with this Marlin? The next morning, when I checked the phone, I found some shocking news. There were pictures of Dorothy sleeping near that apartment door. A shiver ran down my spine as I realized someone took this picture of her while she was alone in the middle of the night. But as I checked the last picture, the blood in my veins turned to ice. In the last picture, I could see a bony, tall woman standing behind her while looking at the camera with burning eyes. No doubt she's the one who took the selfie while Dorothy slept on the floor. Hate and disgust were drooling from her piercing stare. I have never seen such a cruel face, ever. I got furious, thinking instead of caring for this poor child, she went on taking selfies with my sleeping daughter. I was going to call the landlady to complain about this Marlin when I heard heavy breathing behind me, and as I turned back, I saw a woman-like figure walking away. Look at her audacity. She entered my house and was watching me all this time? I rushed and peeked in the corridor to scream at this mannerless, weird woman, but I froze. The woman in the picture was standing near my main door. She was standing at the end of the corridor with that same scary stare. What she did next freaked me out. Without opening the door, she kind of passed through it like air and disappeared. I couldn't believe my eyes and screamed while fainting on the floor. When I woke up, I saw our landlady, Mrs. Smith, was standing near my bed while Dorothy sat near me. She came to hear my scream that also woke up my daughter. Dorothy opened the door and somehow let Mrs. Smith in. I told her everything, and she shook her head with a guilty face. She told me that the reason I got this apartment for a cheap rate was because of some disturbing reasons. A woman named Marlin stayed next door, who hung herself after losing her daughter in a car accident. I left that place right away, but it still scares me to sleep thinking my daughter and I saw a dead woman inside our apartment. Since then, surprisingly, Dorothy has never sleepwalked again.
Our first week living in the new apartment, number 37B,
was an absolute dream. We were able to secure a 2-year lease way under market price. The rooms came furnished, and everyone we met, from our new neighbors to the handyman, were kind and welcoming. I was just beginning to relax and accept that something finally went right for Laura and me when we started to hear the knocking at night.
"There it is again, Mike," Laura said, looking up from her book. "Don't tell me you didn't hear that."
We were in bed, Netflix droning in front of us while Laura read and I played my Switch. I put the console down and listened closely. After 30 seconds, I did hear something. There was a faint thump from somewhere outside of the bedroom.
"Is someone in the house?" Laura whispered.
I motioned for her to stay where she was. I stood up and pulled a baseball bat from under the bed. Stepping carefully in my socks, I opened the bedroom door. It was dark in the rest of the apartment. Our calico cat, Zelda, padded out after me as I inched into the hall. Lifting the bat high, I waited. I listened. More than a minute of silence passed. "Who's there?" I shouted, not sure what the hell else you're supposed to yell in that situation. It was coming from the kitchen. I pawed at the wall, searching for the nearest light switch. Why the fuck didn't I keep a flashlight on the nightstand? I finally found what I was looking for. The hallway lit up. The glow barely touched the kitchen, a small room full of shadows. "Watch my back," I whispered to Zelda, who was staring down the hall. I moved quickly, turning on any light switches as I passed. The kitchen was empty, as was the living room, the spare bedroom, and the bathroom. There were no more thuds. "All clear," I called out to Laura. She popped her head out of the bedroom doorway.
"It sounded like a platoon marching through the apartment."
I shrugged. Old pipes?"
"Pipes?"
Laura scooped up Zelda and went back inside the bedroom.
"Or we have a ghost."
I smiled and rested the bat on my shoulder. Laura was always a little superstitious. There was a reasonable explanation for the sounds. My smile slipped. I went and double-checked the deadbolt and the locks on the door, just to be safe. Laura and Zelda were both asleep by the time I got back into bed. I spent a long time staring at the TV on the wall without really watching the show. Just as I was drifting off to sleep, I thought I heard a faint scratching sound from the wall above the headboard. The noise didn't repeat, and I managed to convince myself it was my imagination as I closed my eyes. We noticed the smell about 2 weeks after moving in. The odor was bad when you were in the living room, even worse if you stood in one corner of the kitchen. There was a draft in the hallway, but only during certain hours of the day. Usually early morning or just after dinner. New sounds popped up nearly every night. Thumps and knocks and scratching. At least once, Laura swore she heard whispering. Tying all of the strange happenings together was a constant sense that we were being watched by someone or something. The sensation was strongest whenever I stood in front of a mirror to the point where I started avoiding them entirely. Laura got to work immediately, trying to cleanse the apartment. She burned sage, hung a crucifix in the hallway, and even bought a Ouija board. If we did have a ghost, they remained silent no matter how many times Laura asked for them to give us some sign. Zelda stayed on edge 24/7. We discussed putting the apartment back on the market and leaving, but there was no way we'd find a place in our city for anywhere near the price we paid. While Laura worked on the spiritual side of things, I decided to knock on the doors around the building to ask if anyone knew about any issues with 37B. My first stop was the apartment across the hall. That was a dud. A woman answered the door but left the chain lock in place. I could only see her eye and some dark hair through the crack in the door. "Excuse me, miss," I said, smiling as disarmingly as I could. "I'm your neighbor over in 37B, and..." She slammed the door shut. I raised my hand to knock again, hesitated, then went back across the hall to try my luck with the neighbors on either side of us. The neighbor on our left didn't answer the door. I had better luck with the place on the right, 37C.
"How can I help you?"
an old man said, opening his door on my second knock. "Hi, I'm Mike, your new neighbor in 37B. His smile dropped a little.
"Oh, how are you liking it over there?"
"Well, we've noticed a few, peculiarities. I gave him a brief rundown of all the unexplained phenomena we were experiencing. The old man leaned against his doorframe.
Have you tried burning sage?
Yeah. That was the first thing Laura went to.
Hopefully that'll help. Are you two the church-going type?
Not in particular. The old man smiled, sharper than I'd seen before.
Might want to give it a try. Seems there's something wrong with 37B. Can't tell you how many folks have gone in and out of that place. A shadow lies over it.
He shrugged.
Come by for dinner sometime. Bring your roommate.
Girlfriend.
Sure, bring her. Sorry, I couldn't be of more help.
The old man closed the door. I stood for a moment, processing. Someone cursed softly down the hall. The handyman was kneeling on the carpet, patching up a large hole in the drywall. Was there somebody throwing bowling balls around out here? I asked, walking over.
Either that or there was an unlicensed hallway rodeo.
The handyman stood up, removed his work gloves, and held out his hand. He was a young guy, barely looked out of college, skinny and pale. I'd passed him a few times on the stairs. The guy was always smiling, usually humming to himself. Oldies, mostly. If my neighbors didn't have any answers, maybe the handyman could shed some light on the weirdness in 37B. I gave him the same bullet points I'd told the old man. The handyman chewed on his lip and stared at the door to my apartment.
Maybe I shouldn't tell you this, as it's only a rumor, and an ugly one at that, he said. And take this all with as much salt as you'd like. I don't personally believe in ghosts, spirits, or any of that, but if there was a haunted apartment in this building, it would be 37B. There was a death there a few years back. Ruled natural causes, but I always had some doubts. Nice old lady, lived alone. The only visitor was her brother and just some cats for company. When they found her, the cats had already started chewing away.
The handyman noticed the look on my face.
Sorry, that's a bit too much information. I have a bad habit of oversharing. Anyway, rumor has it there were some suspicions that the woman had a little help dying, but nothing was ever proven. Even since then, it's like the apartment has been cursed. Folks don't usually manage to stay there more than a few months. Creepy shit, my man.
Did they ever question her brother? I asked. Sounds like he would be the number one suspect.
Not sure if they did, but you could always ask him.
Do you know where he lives?
Sure, and so do you. You've already met the fella. He lives alone in apartment 37C.
I debated telling Laura about my conversation with the handyman, but ultimately decided to sleep on it. The truth was, I didn't even know what I'd tell her.
Hey, honey, looks like our apartment might be haunted, and it's possible the killer is living next door. Oh, also, he invited us over for dinner.
I was up late that night, trying to distract myself with a game. Laura was sleeping with Zelda curled up on her chest. The thumping sound started around 3 a.m., I put my switch away and began walking slowly around the room, trying to follow the sound while not waking Laura. The thumps stopped in the hallway outside our bathroom. When I flipped on the light, the room was empty, but the sensation that I was being watched was practically vibrating the air. I stared at my reflection in the mirror for the first time in days. Nothing appeared out of the ordinary. There were no gruesome figures lurking behind me. No shadows creeping closer, but it was cold, as if there was a draft. I glanced around the room. One of the towels hanging near the mirror was moving. It was barely a twitch, but unmistakable. The draft. The cold. The sense of being watched. I stared at the mirror as the pieces fell into place. It's only a suspicion, but if I was right. I walked out of the bathroom and headed back to bed. The thumping sound followed me, dull but close, like it was coming from inside the wall. I pulled the baseball bat from under the bed, then returned to the bathroom. Again, the thuds followed, but before they could catch up, I raised the bat shoulder height and swung it into the bathroom mirror. The glass exploded outward, raining razor shards into a hole in the wall. Someone shrieked.
"Mike!" Laura yelled from the bedroom. I advanced on the broken mirror, still holding the bat.
The opening was roughly the size of a manhole cover, big enough for a person to squeeze through, but far from roomy. It led into a hollow in our wall. Someone inside screamed again. Then I heard the sound of crunching glass, of a heavy object half running, half crawling. Laura sprinted into the doorway.
Jesus, Mike, the mirror! What happened? What is that hole?
Call 911, I told her, still watching the opening. It was too dark to see into the hole, but more sounds came drifting out, followed by other sounds, wet sounds, and sobbing. I didn't take my eyes off the remains of the mirror until the police arrived 10 minutes later. By then, the screaming had stopped, but something was still gurgling inside the walls. The cops weren't eager to climb in to investigate. One of them shined his flashlight around and did peek his head in, but said the wall turned a corner close on the other side, so he couldn't see much, but he did see broken glass and blood. Lots of both. We didn't get a full picture of what happened until the fire department arrived, and a brave woman, small enough to climb through the opening, ventured inside the walls. She had to shimmy along between the sheetrock until she was able to round the corner. That's where she found our handyman. The man was completely nude and covered in thick gray grease. Our nighttime visitor, the one thumping in the walls and watching us. We found out later that all of the mirrors in 37B were one way, like they have at police stations. The handyman could see us, watch us as we brushed our teeth, combed our hair, and even showered. He was just thin enough to squeeze through the space between the walls with the help of a little grease. Over time, he'd made tunnels and doors and hiding places all around the interior of the apartment. Some nights, he might have even slipped out to roam around without our knowledge. It was a chilling thought, but at least he wasn't a threat to us anymore. He must have been right at the mirror when I'd broken it. The falling glass cut him badly, wounds made worse when he must have fallen in surprise right on those sharp edges. When he saw me in the opening and heard Laura yell, he panicked, scrambling to crawl out of sight. Glass ripped up his arms, his feet, even his stomach and throat. The handyman managed to get himself stuck in a tight spot between some studs in the wall. If he was calm, maybe he could have found a way to wiggle through, but he was desperate and bleeding like a stuck pig. By the time the firefighter reached him, he was beyond saving. I wish I could feel bad for him. We haven't had any issues with 37B since.